Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Ethics Talk. My name is Hope May, and I'm joined tonight by Rebecca Woodkey.
Hello.
And in a few minutes, Erica Maley will be hopefully joining us via Skype. And I just wanted to also mark the moment and to congratulate Erica on getting in her application for the Truman Scholarship, which is a huge accomplishment. So congratulations, Erica, if you're listening to this. Yeah, awesome. It's a lot of work to do that, and so that was done today. So we are marking the occasion with this comment. Tonight's show is actually a continuation of last week's show, which was on the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. We'll refer to that as the UDHR. You can actually read and access the UDHR at our show resources page, which is at ethicstalk.cmich, that's cmich.edu. It's short. In front of us we have one page front and back. It's a short declaration of 30 articles, and tonight we are focusing on just one of them, which would be Article 26. Article 26 has three sections, and we are going to be zooming in on Section 2, which says education shall be directed to the full development of the human personality and the strengthening of respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms. And that clause before the and is what we are focused on. We are going to call this the development clause. So it says, again, education shall be directed to the full development of the human personality. Just that little bit right there. That's just Section 2, and there are other sections in Article 26 as well. If you're familiar with the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the sort of clause nicknames, like the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, or the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, or the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment, the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, the sort of clause language is very useful. I'm zooming in on a little bit. And so, again, Development Clause of Article 26, Section 2. The roadmap for the conversation is to first talk about the Development Clause in relation to other articles of the UDHR. So it's sort of environment within the UDHR and possible tensions that the article has with other articles and even with other subdivisions of itself. And then after doing that, we'll get into the meaning of the development clause and what it might look like, and if we get to the question why this development is protected and safeguarded by the UDHR. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Rebecca.
Thank you very much. So as Hope was explaining, with many legal documents, it can have contradictions within itself, which is what the UDHR can seem to have. So Article 26, education shall be directed to the full development of the human personality and to the strengthening and respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms. Now, this could potentially, some could argue, contradict Article 3, which says everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of the person. Now, what we have to do to eliminate these contradictions is really key in on these terms, define them, and get rid of the ambiguity that the English language can have when we don't use precise diction. So what exactly is education? What is its goal? Now, if we go based on Article 26, we can argue that the purpose of education is to attain the full development of the human personality. So that's the ultimate goal of education. Now, how could that contradict Article 3? Everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of the person.
That's my question.
It could potentially, you could argue that imposing education on somebody is inconsistent with liberty. It's imposing, it could be government imposing on liberty. Government or bigger organization saying you need to become educated, you need to do this. But if you look at education strictly as the attainment of personality, of the full development of the human personality, you could, I believe that education is an expression of liberty, because education is equipping the individual to develop personality, to exercise his or her freedom.
Okay, so just to clarify, when you say education is, what did you say, a development of liberty? Sorry.
An expression.
An expression of liberty. So can you say a little bit more about that?
So when a person, ideally, when one becomes educated, one is developing their individual, his or her individual personality.
Okay.
And personality, it includes emotion, it includes thought, it includes deeper cognitive processes, which can equip the individual to exercise liberty, to exercise their freedom.
So what you're saying is, in order to exercise liberty, it's almost like liberty is a kind of skill or capacity.
Right. Is it, I suppose.
Well, I mean, what you seem to be saying is that education, you know, provides someone with the tools or something, which enable them to express liberty.
Right.
So, like, true or false, liberty is some, is like a capacity that needs to be developed versus how many people think of liberty.
Right.
Like just being able to do whatever you want to do, or the absence of constraints, which is not so much a capacity. It's more like it, that sense of liberty, of like freedom from constraints. It's like the capacity is already there, and I just need to have the chains removed. But you're talking about development of like certain inner things.
Potentially to realize even what the individual wants, what the individual wants to attain, what the how the individual wants to live, how they want to govern themselves.
Okay.
They need to know that for themselves first.
Right.
Which is what education can develop.
Okay.
It can develop the individual's goals.
Okay. So without education, the individual can't know what her true goals are?
I think with education, those goals become, there needs to be some level of realization.
Okay. So, and maybe it's because education sort of exposes you to possibilities.
Right.
I mean, true, in your own private world, you can be exposed to some, I guess, through watching TV or going onto YouTube. But I would say, like, that kind of exposure, perhaps it's superficial. I don't know. This is a very interesting question. I don't know the answer. But, you know, and it goes to this question, what do we mean by education?
Right.
But is it because the knowledge about one's goals can only be realized if one is exposed to a sufficient number of possible goals? So, for example, if I'm just exposed to two possible callings, a doctor and a wife, and I don't even know about teaching or being a lawyer, right? Presumably my, and let's just say my real calling is teaching at law school, presumably my liberty isn't being fully developed. Is that what you would say?
I don't think liberty is, nobody should be denied liberty based on their level of education, but liberty can only be amplified with education.
Okay. Cool. All right. So then why is it inconsistent? So is this what we mean by liberty? And I agree. I think that whatever liberty is, it's not just absence of constraints. It's like the presence of certain things within this, the person. And so given that Article 26 says, and the development clause of Article 26 says, education shall be directed to the full development of the human personality, then it doesn't seem to be inconsistent with liberty, does it?
No. But again, you have to define what you mean by education and define.
Right. And so what you were saying before was somebody might read this article and think, well, if I have the right to liberty, then I have the right to educate myself in ways that I see fit.
Right.
And if that's the meaning of liberty, then is there an inconsistency with Article 26? So, go ahead.
So in the third section of Article 26,
okay.
parents have a prior right to choose the kind of education that shall be given to their children.
Hmm.
So it seems like this section is trying to preserve liberty in Article 3.
Okay. We actually have some callers on the line, so let me just click them in and make sure they're there. Erica, is that you?
Yes.
Okay. Good, you're there. And there's someone else. Caller, are you there?
Why? Can anybody join the party?
Okay. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Hey, don't worry. I'm not going to embarrass you tonight. I actually want to get in on the discussion.
Okay, cool. So let's just go back to this original question. And Rebecca, just restate the thought so that we're all here.
Okay, so we're looking at different conflicts that can arise within the UDHR, specifically looking at Article 26 on education, and looking at Article 3, everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of the person, and trying to dissect it and see if education can impede on liberty or if it does foster liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you want my comments on that?
Please. Of course.
Okay. Cool. Just before I got picked up by you, I heard her say, I think Section 3 or something like that, where a person does have the right to choose, and I think a person does have the right to choose, but a person does not have a right to education. Just like a person does not have a right to enter my apartment, or a right to your intellectual property, or a right to anybody else's achievements. We have a right to pursue our happiness the way that we see fit. But when people make offers, or when there are opportunities out there, just because the opportunities are there doesn't mean that the person who wants them automatically has a right to them. A person does not have a right to a doctor, to water, which is on somebody else's land. If the water is on somebody else's land and that person doesn't want to give up the water, even though it may cost him nothing, to a person who may be dying of thirst, that person is, I can't use the word on your show, but the person who is dying doesn't have the absolute right.
Well, last week we made this distinction between positive rights and negative rights, and positive and negative do not mean good and bad. And I think what you're saying when you say nobody has a right to a doctor, and just because an opportunity is there doesn't mean that they have a right to it. Let's go to the doctor example.
Mm-hmm.
I presume what you're saying is people don't have a right to a doctor, meaning that doctor doesn't have to offer her services just because a person says, give me. And that would be like a positive right. So if I have a right to a doctor, that means that my society has a duty to give me a doctor on demand. So rights always imply duties
mm-hmm.
on other people. And so some rights do imply other people or entities to like give us something. But there's also a sense of rights, negative rights, meaning I have a right to the free exercise of my own religion, which means that the government has a duty not to interfere. So if I say I have a right to a doctor, that means that other people have a duty not to interfere in my selection of the doctor.
So
I just wanted to make that
clarification. Right. I agree with you 100% on everything you've just said. Right.
Okay, it's not me, it's just definitional.
Oh, okay.
All right. It's not me. It's just like this is a conceptual distinction made in discussions about rights.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think when we're talking about education, you may raise a very interesting question because you say there is no right to education. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights respectfully disagrees with you.
Well, what do they know?
Yeah, right. And the question is, if it says that everyone has this right to education, does that mean that the government or some other entity has a duty to provide this education? Or does it mean that the government or other people have the duty not to interfere in my pursuit of my education? And I think you're talking about the second one.
I am talking about the latter. Okay. This is the whole Occupy movement. A lot of people there who don't know much about what they're doing, they're talking about, well, I want my tuition paid for free. And then I'd like to have a minimum wage. I'd like to have $18 an hour. I'd like to have no private ownership. And I'd like to have a ban on guns. And everybody has a nice wish list. If we boil things down to what our human rights are, our rights are simply very simple. We have a right to live our lives the way we want to, as long as we don't encroach on other people's other rights, which are the same as ours. So, to make it not quite as simple, but fairly simple, is my rights end where your rights begin, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all non-due respect to the Constitution or whatever you're reading, you know, the UN thing on rights. The UN has a nice agenda going, and we just have to take a look at things in a very simple philosophical way. In the Declaration of Independence, it said that we have unalienable rights granted to us by God, which kind of doesn't offend me, but makes me think, since I'm an agnostic, what happens if there is no such thing as a God? Does that mean my rights disappear? No. It means, again, what I've said, we have a right to pursue our happiness no matter what country we're born in, since we're all human beings, to pursue our happiness as long as we don't, you know, upset the apple cart by stepping other people's rights. Now, the definition of what those rights are, of course, would be the next step. It's not that hard. So to me, you know, getting back to the education, the right to health care, et cetera, we don't have a right to what other people produce. In a capitalist society, people will produce and offer them to anybody that they want to in exchange for whatever the other person has to offer as well. If, again, a person who sees somebody dying of thirst has the resources to help that person out and doesn't do it, he has no obligation. But for him not to do it turns him into words that I can't say on your show.
Sure, he has no legal obligation, but I think we're saying he might have a moral obligation.
He should have a moral obligation, absolutely. Out of just having some sort of attachment to the human race. Again, if it doesn't cost him anything and he's withholding help, he's a psychopath. That I can say that on your show. But the other the people who want what other people have, they don't have a right to it.
Rebecca, do you want to add something?
So do rights have to be legally binding or morally binding rights?
Well, there's two kinds.
Right.
And so I think Joe was saying that, there are moral rights. But see, this is a very interesting question, because all of this stuff and this Universal Declaration of Human Rights, it seems to be laying out the duties, I think, of government.
Right.
So insofar as this declaration says the government has a duty to do, like once you start to implicate that whole machinery, and you're dealing with legality, constitution, stuff like this.
And you're I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
You're also opening up the door so that even though the government may be good, let's say at the time when some sort of law is implemented, there's 535, oh brother, when will that ever happen? 535 good politicians, 9 really good Supreme Court justices, and 1 really good president. What about the subsequent elections after that? What happens if the power comes in, takes advantage of a new law, and morphs it, bastardizes it, and turns it into unintended consequences, or perhaps for their own edification, intended consequences meant to really harm the population for which the good law was intended to benefit. There's a slippery slope that people have to become very, very aware of. Whatever a good law is, regardless of its good intentions, bad people can also misuse that law. If we just take it upon ourselves to take responsibility for ourselves, we don't rely on the government, and we can take better care of ourselves that way, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of the fears I have of Google.
Whoa, what's that?
Google?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're kidding, right?
No, not kidding. I mean, I know Google tracks, but...
you know, Google, the search engine,
yeah.
Gmail, they know everything. You have a question, you go to Google, you type it in. They just
right.
have a lot of information, and right now their motto is do no evil, and I think that the people there are good, but there's this entity that's amassing all this information about us, and I'm just afraid of that information getting into...
Well, it's already in bad hands. It's already in the government's hands. I took a look at my profile on Google anyway, and they have information about me from 2006. So when they track you, they don't stop. So if that's what you meant, then yeah. And they're tracking me. Yeah, okay.
Uh-oh, that means they're tracking me because, you know, now you're in our world.
yeah.
Okay, anyway. So, Rebecca.
So, in order... You said earlier that you can have these laws established and then they have good intentions and then others get into office, change it, they can use it for evil.
Mm-hmm.
So could this, is that maybe why we have to be more specific and more moral, take a more moral approach when we are creating these documents and say everybody has a right to education so that that moral good will be upheld?
Well, you're presuming that further documentation, further laws are needed. Congress passes over 2,000 laws a year. 99% of them are not necessary. What I'm saying is that to get the education that you want, first, don't have the Department of Education in anything. If you want to educate your child, do so, but keep the government out of it. Again, as Hope was stating correctly, the definitional terms, is that we don't want government interference. We don't have a right to do something simply because it's there. And if we have a right, then is that the negative or the positive definition, Hope, where a duty of the government to supply it?
That would be a positive.
That's positive, huh? All right.
I know, but you're don't take the
connotation.
Thank you.
Okay, the good and the bad, like you said before. Okay.
Yes.
So, we can do for ourselves very, very well. Think of it this way: if people are in government trying to think for us, why can't we, the people, who are people, just like the people in government, think for ourselves? Since it is us that we're thinking about, why can't we do a better job?
Okay, I have something to say, but I just want to... Erica, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Not very well.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Okay, I think I sort of have a comment on what Joe was saying, and just that there's two ways to look at it. I see what he's saying about how maybe we can do things better for ourselves, but other times, I think that... government interference maybe is necessary because they're doing it to protect you. And in the case of education, you know, maybe parents do see that they think that they can do better in educating their child. But you also have to think about the rights of the child and will the parent adequately educate that their son or daughter. And maybe the kids want to attend an institution. You know, so I think there's different rights that you have to think of. And as Joe said earlier, your rights might infringe upon somebody else's rights. So I guess the battle of rights between the government, the parents, and the children. I don't know.
Are you taking up the cause of the devil's advocate? Or do you actually believe that the government can educate kids better than their own parents can?
Well, I don't think that the government, per se, educates But I think that some of the rules that they have in place maybe sometimes safeguard against inadequate education and introduce new ideas that maybe parents alone couldn't introduce to their kids. So I guess I really do believe that in some cases that it could be beneficial. But I don't think it's a black or white situation because there's rights of different parties to be considered in each situation.
Well, there will be parents who don't know how to train their kids, civilize their children, educate their kids. There's probably a lot of parents like that. But then they have to be educated themselves. If you take a look at the educational system, it actually is not educating people to think. It's only giving you disjointed information and then perhaps allowing you to try to piece together the information using your own brain power and your own intelligence to see if you can come up with feasible conclusions.
Are you talking about public education, Joe?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay.
Well,
check it.
to what Joe said, I agree with you. I just think that sometimes the laws that our government establishes are there to safeguard against certain things. But I, too, strongly agree with you that, you know, a lot of the time in public education, it's more about memorization and you're not really learning. But it all depends on the student, it depends on the instructor, and there's other factors to consider.
Well, I can address that by asking one question, which I've asked plenty of people before, and I've gotten into discussions about government. The schools are supposedly there to help us think. Now, the art and science of thinking, as Hope, myself, and a couple of your friends, Hope, Mike, and another guy, from a program, I don't know, maybe 8-9 months ago. And I pose this question. If the schools are there to help us think, how come there's no school in America, public education, the middle school, high school, that I know of, offers courses in critical thinking or logic?
I mean, they exist.
They do?
Yeah, well,
I don't know of any.
So I know that, first of all, it depends what your major is. And if you're a philosophy major, you have to take philosophy. But since, Rebecca, you've done, I don't know if you talked about academically adrift and critical, does that come up at all?
Right, it does.
Okay.
There was actually a group of researchers who came to Central Michigan University and presented their research findings. And what they've kind of found is over the past, I'm not sure how many years, but higher education has drifted away from learning, away from critical thinking skills. And it's been because of the way that we learn and the way classrooms are set up. And they just have different research showing that the number of pages that you have to write for a class goes down, the amount of reading you have to do goes down for a class. And that is where you learn your critical thinking and your comprehension skills, is through intensive reading, through lengthy reading, through difficult math problems, really. And they've kind of come up with results saying that we're kind of drifting away from attaining that critical thinking.
Hmm.
So how do you get that critical thinking in the first place?
You have to have a curriculum where you're having a formalized classroom of logic and critical thinking. They don't have that, as far as I know, in middle school, like I said, or in high school.
No.
Now,
yes.
Yeah, and in college, yeah, they have it. I mean, philosophy. And you also get a little taste of it if you're going to be an English major, too. But in order to become a lawyer, right, Hope, the LSATs, you really have to know logic in order to get into law school. And it's kind of like people have to take crash courses to find out about logic. And critical thinking, you don't really learn when you're writing. You don't really learn when you're, even if you're mathematically inclined, as much as if you had a core official curriculum of critical thinking. And there is such a core formalized process of thinking, critical thinking. And that should be introduced early. Kids would soak it up.
I totally agree, and I think it's a travesty that logic is not required throughout public education curriculum. And I just want to point out that Socrates, over 2,000 years ago, what he was doing was teaching the young people to think critically and challenge the authority figures in their lives. And he was a good teacher.
Very good.
He was a very good teacher because his students got it, and then they would, in fact, practice the critical thinking on the people who had power over them. And I don't know if you know what happened to him, but he was put on trial for corrupting the youth. I think perhaps that legacy is not still with us.
And don't forget Mr. Hemlock.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some trepidation about teaching people to think critically. I mean, sometimes I wonder if it's... Is it accidental? Is it deliberate?
Not accidental.
I don't know.
It's not accidental.
Yeah, really, you have a conspiracy theory, huh?
Well, it's
so
not
then should
that.
It be a right?
There's a book
should
called
a
Dumbing
right?
Down of America by Charlotte Isabiden. She was a policymaker in the Reagan administration, and she talks about how she attended meetings where people actually said that their main goal, as told to her when she was younger, she's about, I don't know, 70-something, 80 now, was to dumb down America back in the 1920s. They wanted to make tests and courses hard to make in math so that people couldn't think. So this is
who's
in her
they?
Book. The textbook writers, the public school, the Department of Education, they wanted to. The government wanted to dumb down. And it's in the book called Dumbing Down. And the website is called dumbingdownofamerica.com.
I also recommend The Closing of the American Mind.
Is that by Cato?
No, it's by Bloom.
Oh.
But anyway, go ahead.
So if it is actually a concern that America is being dumbed down, should it be then, do we need to preserve this right of education? Education shall be directed to the full development of the human personality. That includes developing logic. That includes developing critical thinking skills. So if we're concerned with ourselves being dumbed down, I think we really need to take a look at this right and really uphold it for the betterment of our society.
So you're recommending that the institution, which is deliberately dumbing us down, continue.
Well,
and try to change it from within. But that's like the hens asking the foxes to let them out. If there isn't any high school, any middle school in America, 50 states, I don't know how many thousands of schools, not one that I know of, is teaching logic and teaching critical thinking. And yet there are plenty of educators who have said that people going to school are not getting the education that they need, and we're, I think, like 35th in the world in science exams, math exams. What does that say? We can't continue the same old, same old.
Right, and then there needs to be a movement to re-preserve this right.
No, there needs to be a movement to eliminate the cause.
Can I just say, I think, you know, the question is, given that this exists, and I think that we all agree that this critical thinking... And let me just, you know, bring it back to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Yes, it's a product of the UN on the heels of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
There's this, I think it's Article 1, which says, all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason. Like, that phrase, I know, well, I don't know anything, but I've read that it was... the handiwork of Charles Malik, who was on the drafting committee, and he was a philosopher of space and time, actually, from Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
And he fought to get this word reason into this document, because at the time, you know, there was a lot of interest in painting the picture of man as just sort of a social material being, that is just a product of his environment, and Malik fought to get reason in there. And I think it's important that what we're saying now about critical thinking relates to this article, endowed with reason. And what we're saying is, given that we have this capacity, reason, and given that it ought to be developed, critical thinking and so forth, and given that it's not sufficiently so, who or what is the solution to that problem? And one is to have public education change. And another is what, Joe? Like, if that's not the solution, then
well, it'd be nice to have public education changed if it were in the hands of people who were thinking of the United States citizens as people that they wanted to benefit. But the government, for decades, more longer than that, they've been infected with people who don't give a rat's ass about America or the citizens. And the empirical evidence is by asking if people that you knew were absolutely honest, and everybody knows an uncle or a father or a mother who's absolutely honest and intelligent, if they had a bunch of your fathers, mothers, and uncles who were intelligent and well-meaning in Congress, would we be in the state of affairs that we're in today? Would we have the same recurring problems that happen year after year after year? Why aren't these problems solved? And another reason why we don't have logic and critical thinking in the curriculum is that when you do learn logic and critical thinking, you can't be bullshitted. Mm-hmm. Because anybody who talks to you from then on has to make sense. And if they don't make sense, ipso facto, they're wrong.
Right. So it's in certain interests.
To not have it, especially right. Politicians. Politicians do what? If you take a look at the political climate of today, yes, it's 1960s, 50s, it doesn't matter. You're going to have nothing but two parties which people are going to be vested in. And they're going to think, if I'm going to vote, I'm going to vote for a Democrat or I'm going to vote for a Republican. And yet, the third parties have always existed but never got any following. Why? Because the media, the polls, the surveys, the pundits on TV, they all got everybody's trust and they said, everybody's going to vote for this guy for this reason or that gal for that reason, and then everybody goes, I'll do that too. You know, everybody's a herder, a herder. I could say sheep, but...
You mean people, H-U-R-T-E-R?
No, well, that too, but I mean H-E-R-D-E-R, and
right.
They just go along with the herd. If they were, really using logic and critical thinking, they would just have to ask why. I mean, it's not... Critical thinking and logic doesn't make you an Einstein. It just makes you question.
Mm-hmm.
And if the answers aren't forthcoming in a logical way, you have a right to question why not. So usually, like with the government, you have to ask with a lot of situations, why is this happening? Why not? The government should be doing a better job. Education, agriculture, the other alphabet agencies, they have the power. They have the resources. They have the money through our taxes. We have computers. We supposedly have had, a lot of bright people working on it. How come we still have the same recurring problems? Why? Because people keep falling for the same campaign promises. When Obama came along and he said change, what else was he going to say? Every incumbent in every office, in every office of the land, whether it's municipal, federal, or city, if he's the incumbent, his program is always going to be, I was here on the status quo, keep me, you get the same. The person who wants to challenge is always going to say, change. And everybody's going, yay, Obama, or yay, him, or yay, her. Doesn't matter, does it?
Well,
I'm over
40. Question is,
mm-hmm.
Okay, but what's a girl to do, really? So, if either way, education, government, there's all these vested interests not to develop critical thinking and sort of, so what you're saying is this document, and we have discussed these things last week, this
mm-hmm.
document, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights,
mm-hmm.
Endowed with reason, how do I develop it and take this seriously if it can't be through the existing modalities that we're used to?
Really using the one right now called the Internet.
I know.
Thank
I think
God.
Real hope for the Internet. I really do.
I know. This burgeoning invention that people are going to say, it won't stick around. Yeah, but it's there. And people who are interested can take a look. And
mm-hmm.
But thank God for the Internet, because up until the Internet actually came into my life, I was a dumb bastard. And I know about politics and the way of life regarding certain important aspects of it. So when you do your research and you keep on coming up with answers that you don't want to come up with, but they're there, you have to ask yourself, how many times does a Titanic have to sink, hit the same iceberg over and over again, before you realize something is really wrong, and it's not just because of abject stupidity?
Wow. Well, so then I still don't feel like we have answered, or maybe we have, the answer to this question of whether or not Article 26, education shall be directed to full development. The question that we started this conversation with was whether or not this Article 3, everyone has a right to life and liberty, contradicts education shall be directed to the full development of the human personality. And I think what we have established is that it depends on what you mean by liberty, and it depends on whether you're referring to that as a positive or a negative right.
Mm-hmm.
But it still seems like, going back to this, I want to go back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, because Rebecca was saying something like, you know, you need education to express liberty.
Right.
So could you, do you see the connection with...
Well, if you see, if you view education, try to not think of it as the traditional public schooling sense. Think of education strictly as the full development of the human personality.
Okay.
Now, how is that achieved at all? potentially, you can maybe try to dissect it. So what composes human personality? You can think of it potentially as... there are 16 basic desires that motivate our actions and define our personalities, so says Professor Stephen Rice in some of his studies.
I thought you were going to quote Maslow. Okay.
I know, it sounded like Maslow to me.
Oh, I'll get there in a second. That's next on my list. So there's these basic desires, so acceptance, curiosity, eating, family, honor, idealism, independence, and so forth, that comprise our human personality. So if we think of education as attaining our personality, think of it in that sense.
Like feeding our desires?
Right.
Wow.
Or like our personality is a unique combination. We each have different personalities, which is a unique combination of our different desires.
Okay.
So how do you attain your unique composition of desires?
Right. And what's the role of reason in all of that?
Right. And I
Ta-da.
Mean, you could go back to the hierarchy of needs.
Yeah.
And see, okay, well, first, like, physiological needs, and then you have your safety and security and health.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go on to belongingness, love, and friendship, and then the fourth of self-esteem, recognition, achievement, and then self-actualization. And I think that a lot of our desires are potentially developed in our self-esteem, recognition, achievement stage of our hierarchy of needs. So I'm just potentially thinking that that could be the goal of education, is to get
self-actualization,
get individuals to achieve.
But how do you make the connection?
Recognition and achievement, and then self-actualization
potentially
subsequently follow.
I haven't quite followed it. I still want to find out the connection between that and the reason that you introduced.
Who, me?
No, Rebecca.
Okay.
So how does reason... Well, according to Article 1, and reason is something that we are endowed with. So is reason something that needs to be further developed into logic and critical thinking? Reason is the baseline, the capacity?
Well, I would say yes, because reason, we have the capacity to reason, but if we're not molded properly, we end up as stupid bastards. If you go through the public school system, if they don't teach you how to reason, you are left on your own. And if you're not molded, if you don't know the correct steps to logic, remember before Socrates came along, there might have been a formal... somebody teaching logic. but logic was not formalized, so people were left on their own to try to connect the dots. If they were lousy at it, they were lousy at it. If they were taught logic, they could become better at it. If they were taught critical thinking, then your reasoning capacity could be molded so that you could actually develop your brain. If we leave it to ourselves to try to develop ourselves without some sort of intervention to speed us up, then we'd be like the Lord of the Flies, and we'd be on an island, okay? And instead of the kids from Britain who are about 10, 11, or 12, let's suppose kids stranded on an island who are 5, 6, or 7, without the process of thinking being taught to them, how well would these kids survive? Reason is a capacity that we have. It's like a blank slate. We have to have it molded by the correct outside forces. Otherwise, we don't learn how to think. We have the capacity to think, but we're not into the process of thinking until somebody shows us. Otherwise, we have to learn on our own. That can take years and years to develop what we can learn in an hour.
Not with the internet, though.
Well, the internet's a great learning tool.
Erica, do you have anything to say? You've been quiet.
Yeah, sorry, Erica. She just lets me blab on because I've been here before.
Yeah, I had to leave for about a 4 or 5 minute span, so I'm just getting back into what
you guys
are.
Sorry, I just wanted to make sure that.
No, I'm listening.
Realize that you're still included.
Thank you.
Okay, I have. I thought this discussion of who's the psychologist that you mentioned, Wright?
Rice,
okay. Never heard of him. I think we're dealing with several questions at once. Mm-hmm. So there's one question like, what is the human personality? Well, it could be like 16 different desires or blah, blah, blah needs, and mm-hmm. each one of us has our own constellation of desires. There's that question, what is the human personality? And there's the question of what role does reason play in the human personality? And is this one thing that is, like, it's, everybody has this? Then there's the question of, well, how ought we to develop that? And there's the question of, what is the relationship between reason and liberty? There's also this question of, what's the relationship between these other capacities that you mentioned, these 16 desires? And liberty. And I'll just throw something out there that I hope connects what Joe was saying about this need for reason to be developed. The ancients, God love them for their clarity and focus, were very interested in a problem called akrisia, which translates into English as weakness of will. The Greek word for power is kratos, and when you have an A, that means it's the alpha primitive, like atypical, not typical, atheistic, mm-hmm. don't believe in God. So when you have an A in front of many words, it's like the privation of that word. Kratos being the word for power in Greek, akratos means lacking power, akrisia, weakness of will, you have no power over yourself. Mm-hmm. So what it looks like is you have reason. You know how to think, you know how to realize a goal, these kinds of things. But, you know, and your reason will bid you do this, and you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Like the desire or this other part of your, quote, personality trumps reason mm-hmm. and controls you instead of reason. We're getting into, you know, huge questions of moral psychology and, oh, my God, which is good. But
it is good. He's getting to the basis of human motivation, yeah.
Right? So there's this question of, do we agree? Let's suppose we have 20 different desires, you know, and 30 different needs, but do we agree that, because what the ancients said, and this is, I mentioned, The Closing of the American Mind by Alan Bloom, you know, he thinks that the solution to this dumbing down of America and this lack of development, critical thinking, is caused by our lack of reading the classics, that we need to go back and, like, read the classics and have the traditional canon and so forth. And anyway, what the Greeks said and this is something that some people don't like, because it seems to, quote, violate liberty, okay,
mm-hmm.
is that given all the desires and whatnot that we have, that reason is the most important. It's, yes, we may all be unique and individual, but there's one thing that sort of ought to be developed in order for the humanity and your individuality to be expressed,
right.
and that is reason, and that's different. And maybe that's sort of like the key to unlocking, like you were saying before, our uniqueness is with reason, which is why we should focus on that one thing. And I just want to say that this is the legacy of the Greeks, that this is the thing to be cultivated.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very mindful of, you know, the difficulty in cultivating it, because you may have great logical chops, but be a slob. I mean,
mm-hmm.
You may not be able to realize all of your ends elegantly. So my question for the group is, do we agree that reason is this sort of special thing that ought to be developed, and this is what Rebecca, I think, was saying at the beginning of the show, because it's like the key to unlocking your true liberty and individuality? I say yes.
I totally agree with that, too, and I think that's kind of how I was viewing education at the beginning of the show, is that reason, is that logic, is that ability, that tool to attain the full personality, the complete developmental of self.
Mm. Joe, what do you think?
I think reason is extremely important, but there are a lot of, the reason implies that you're going to, if you use reason very, very well, you're going to become an intelligent human being, which I think has pretty much of a truth in there. The problem that I see, and it may seem contradictory to what I've been saying before, because I've always, emphasized logic and critical thinking, is that the reason why the world is as mucked up as it is, yes, is a lack of reason, but it's because of people's emotional states. And if we can combine reason with the EQ, the emotional quotient, then we'll have a worthy human species. Because there are a lot of people out here who are psychopaths who use their reason very well to commit perfect crimes. But they're doing it for the wrong purpose. They're using their reason for malicious purposes, as opposed to a person who, if he was an Einstein with the heart of Gandhi, could actually use the reason to really produce a much better world. And if the human species as a whole was like that, then we'd have a great human world. But I personally think that if we ever truly attain en masse the ability to achieve escape velocity and leave this planet and go visit the cosmos, the cosmos is in danger, because our DNA propels us to dominate, to hurt, and to conquer. So,
what about Gandhi?
Well, Gandhi was protecting his own self-interest, and he was a humanitarian by doing so. But there are some people who were born, I believe, without the will, the DNA strain to really conquer. But I think most of us, 99%, now over 99%, because 99% means 1 out of 100 is born without it. I believe that the vast majority of humans who have been born on this planet and will be born are born with a predisposition to conquer, to dominate. Take a look at any of our relationships, whether it's with boyfriends, girlfriends, husbands, wives, the church, government, or bosses. It takes 2 minutes to get into a fight. It takes a lot longer to really develop some sort of true intimacy. We have a predisposition to just want to control others, whether it's out of fear of rejection or just because we just like it. But that's what man has been doing ever since we came out of the ooze, you know.
See, I don't know if that's so much as a predisposition as something that is learned and an environmental factor. I don't think it's written within our DNA that to be violent or to be controlling. It's something that...
Well, take a look at two kids who don't even know how to speak their native language and get them together in a room. They're not exactly trying to share with one another.
Oh, well, that's not how I play with my friends.
Yeah, you get a little bit over.
I mean, we would share. But anyway.
You know, but most kids, you know, they like to share, sure, but they also like to take.
I just want to sort of table the theory of human nature that you're articulating, because that's another five shows. And I want to go back to your claim about the EQ and reason, which I just want to flag that, because you are an Aristotelian. That is what Aristotle says. And he says that, you know, actually, this is my reading of Aristotle, but first you have to sort of develop and hone the emotions so that they are correct. And there's this tradition, again, in Aristotle and Plato. They say education begins with the training of pleasure and pain. That, like, if that's not properly honed to the right objects, so that you're pained when you're using reason, things aren't going to bode well for your development. But if that capacity is awakened in the right way in the person, then the sort of development and the unfolding happens quite naturally. It just has to be sort of awakened and fed properly, and then that sort of aspect of the personality sort of directs the development of the human being. And we have 3 minutes left, and... I don't know how to wrap up this show. It's like an impossible show. So I'm going to first, before I attempt to do it, go to Erica, who's been quiet. And do you have anything to say, Erica? Okay, I think she went away. Oh, wait, there she is.
I'm still here. I've been I don't know, I guess the biggest thing that I've learned from my show is kind of taking a step back and doing a lot of listening, that there are a lot of different opinions, and there's no correct answer, it appears, because there's multiple ways of looking at the situation. So it's interesting to discuss, but I don't even know if after discussing it for years and years, you would ever get a definite answer.
And I would just say, you know, indeed, I think there's many issues involved, but I think that... at least Rebecca and I agree that, and I don't know, I mean, I think, Joe, you were adding to it with your EQ comment, which I think what we all agree, and Erica, you can tell us whether you agree with it, because we have come to an agreement here, and it's very important to flag it, which is that reason and emotion are, like, crucial to whatever education and liberty are. Those things are huge and need to be properly cultivated for liberty to be truly realized. Do you agree with that, Erica?
Oh, I 100% agree. And when when you and Rebecca were talking about a little bit back about it being the key to unlocking other areas, I mean, I think that's a perfect analogy for it, because once you're able to understand and use your reason, then you're better able to see larger concepts and more completely learn.
Cool. Well, with 60 seconds left, we're going to call it an evening. It was a fascinating discussion. Thank you so much, Joe, for calling in. And
sure.
Thank you for this contribution about the role of emotion, which sufficiently appreciated because of the Enlightenment Project, in my view. You might want to read the book After Virtue by Alistair MacIntyre, who argues for a return to the kind of thinking that you're advocating.
Oh, okay.
But we'll be back next week in an attempt to do this show on Article 26. I think we got a good start on the development clause. And so thank you very much. You've been listening to Ethics Talk.
Thank you for listening.
And good night, Joe.
Good night, Hope. Good night, all. So you don't have no show on Sundays anymore, huh?
No, okay. Show on Sundays. We're doing Tuesday nights for now.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. All right.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.